Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the heart of downtown San Luis Obispo, right next to the Mission, and we're at the old Carnegie Library. And we're here with Thomas Kessler, who's the executive director of the San Luis Obispo History Center. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Great to be here.
So happy to have you here.
So how long have you been here?
I've been the executive director for almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. I started in July of 2018. Really just almost by accident stumbled into the role. I was the weekend manager at the Dalladay Adobe and Gardens, and there was a transition here at the History Center, and I stepped in as an interim director, and then eventually was offered the permanent position. So Yeah, I've been here for about 5 years.
Cool. And your schooling, did you major in?
Yeah, so I studied international relations at UC Davis. Uh-huh. Really, it was an excuse to spend a year abroad, which I did in Paris at the Political Science Institute.
Wow.
Yeah, in Paris.
Parlez-vous français?
Oui, monsieur, je parle français. I started French in middle school because I liked the French teacher better than the Spanish teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And continued through. I actually have a minor in French language and literature.
Nice.
Yeah, international relations was a great sort of overall look at the humanities with a particular point of view towards a multinational, multicultural worldview.
So how did you wind up from international studies to San Luis Obispo at the History Center?
Yeah, so my grandparents lived in Morro Bay when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the East Bay in Walnut Creek, and my grandparents lived on Beachcomber Drive in Morro Bay, and so all of my best memories as a child were spent on the Central Coast, mm-hmm. whether it be actually on the beach, in the water, in town, doing Central Coast type things. I absolutely loved it.
So lifestyle is what brought you here.
Yeah. Well, and the opportunity came up when my grandparents passed several years ago, and my brother was living in their house when he was getting his master's at Cal Poly. And when he graduated and was looking to move, we're not really a family that can own a beach home. That was never in the cards for us. But if somebody were living there and paying the property taxes and mm-hmm. maintaining the place, then the family would keep it. And so when my brother moved out, I was living in Oakland working a not very satisfying job and jumped on the opportunity to get my foot in the door on the Central Coast.
And here you are.
And here I am.
And how long have you been here now?
I moved in September of 2009, mm-hmm. so 14 years almost.
And how long have you been at the History Center again?
I've been at the History Center for 5 years.
Okay. And talk to us about the big picture, an old classic Carnegie Library. And he went around the country and basically paid for the libraries as long as you supplied the land. And
yes, exactly. Yeah. You supplied the land and the books. The library had to be free to enter mm-hmm. because before him, if you couldn't afford to pay the membership to the library, you didn't have access.
Mm-hmm.
So one of his stipulations, it had to be free. It had to be open to anybody who walked in the door.
And as I recall, he built over 3,000 libraries.
My understanding is in that range.
Around
I think
there,
2,500
yeah.
in yeah. that kind of range,
yeah.
mostly in the United States, almost entirely in the English-speaking world. I think there were three or four in Europe post-World War I. But yeah, the average gift was about $10,000, which 1890, 1900, mm-hmm. that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Our building here was completed in 1905, came in under budget, $9,750.
Wow.
And Andrew Carnegie really didn't place any restrictions on what the building looked like.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very common thing for architects to make a living out of going to these towns that received these grants and designing Carnegie libraries.
So that follows, because you go around, even though like Paso Robles and whatnot, there are some architecturally very similar Carnegie libraries.
The two closest to us are Paso Robles and Lompoc, and both of them were designed by the same architect as ours, William Weeks.
Oh, and he was a classic on the California coast.
Absolutely. Based out of Oakland, I believe he built something like 20, 25 Carnegie libraries, which is a major career, and we're very lucky to be one of them.
That's so cool. So how long did this stay as San Luis Obispo's library?
I think of Andrew Carnegie's three restrictions are it had to be free, it had to be open to anybody who walked in the door, and it had to be open for 50 years. And that, I think, was the really genius part, because everybody got used to the library being a civic service that you just walked into. And so 50 years later, this building was far too small. The city of San Luis Obispo had grown by probably tenfold between 1900 and 1950. But nobody was willing to give up on the idea of having a library. And so the library moved out and went to where the Little Theater is now, before eventually moving down the block to its current location. So the 50-year restriction on Carnegie, the vast majority of his libraries were built in the 1890s, 1900s. So you fast forward 50 years from there, you're in the 1940s, 1950s. And the ethos of that era really was, well, that's old. Let's knock it down and build something new. Which, to be fair, 50 years isn't old enough to really be a classic antique building, but it's also old enough to have some problems. So fair enough. About half of the Carnegie libraries in California did get torn down. But we here in San Luis Obispo are lucky that my organization, what's now called the History Center, had been founded in 1953. We had started building a collection. And so when the library moved out in 1956, we were looking for space to have a museum. And so we made a deal with the city and moved in the next year in 1957 and have been operating as a museum ever since. So at this point, this building has been a museum longer than it ever was a library.
That's really cool. And you've had some classic personas involved. We talked earlier before we started about Louisiana Clayton Dart.
Yes, she was a character and a half. She was the first person to have what is now my job, the first director of the History Center. Really an over-the-top personality. I'm constantly meeting people, lifetimers who've lived here on the Central Coast, who have memories of coming in and meeting Louisiana, and she gave the tour to the museum. She did a lot to do with history. One of my favorite stories is she was instrumental in the process of preserving Morro Rock. So we all know that at one point Morro Rock was mined for stone for construction projects. So she was instrumental in lobbying Congress to get the rock transferred in ownership from the federal government to the state government. It was owned by the feds under the Lighthouse Authority. And so the federal government transferred it to the state, and then she worked with the state government to have it declared a state historic landmark so that it would be preserved for forevermore.
Protected,
exactly.
I remember listening to her on the radio. She did a history show, I think, on KVEC.
She absolutely did. She published a number of books and pamphlets and other stories, and left an absolutely wonderful legacy. She served until about the 1970s, maybe early 80s.
We're at the Old Carnegie Library with Thomas Kessler, who's Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo History Center.
Another big name that has held my position was a few years after that, starting in about the mid-80s, was Mark Hall Patton.
Yeah, he's a legend. He's in Las Vegas
now. He is. My understanding is he's the director of the Nevada State History Museum. And most people will know him as the expert who comes on the various Pawn Star shows to offer historic context to some of the objects that come through.
That's really cool.
He actually just passed through here about a month ago. He's a wonderful, pleasant man. It was a pleasure to meet him. We have a semi-regular newsletter that the History Center sends out, an email newsletter, and I'm always looking for sources. And I'm constantly stealing his articles that he wrote. I had to sort of own up to it to him. And he said, oh, as long as some people don't give attribution. I had promised him I always gave him attribution when I took his work. And he said that was fine. Sometimes people take his work without attribution, and he's got a fair enough problem with that. But yeah, he did all of this great work telling the stories of San Luis Obispo County's history. And it's great to be able to share them.
That's really cool. Tell us the here and now. It's public access, no fee for entry.
Correct. It's a free to enter museum. We're open every day except Tuesdays from 11 to 5. If you're lucky, sometimes our docents like to come in a little early, so you might find us open at, say, 10 on a Wednesday if you're lucky, but we like to encourage folks to come in between 11 and 5.
What are some of the things that somebody would see and experience here?
So the main entry is actually upstairs. We do have a handicapped accessible entrance on the side with an elevator that comes up to the main level. We've got a number of exhibit spaces with, I wouldn't say constantly, but regularly rotating exhibits. It usually takes about a year to research and produce an exhibit. Right now, today, we've got an exhibit about the Varian brothers who grew up in Halcyon, down by Oceano in
the
South. Yeah,
their parents ran the little store there.
Yeah, they were a very wonderful local family. Mm-hmm. Sig and Russ, they would eventually grow up, go to Stanford, and really were instrumental in founding Silicon Valley. They invented a device called the Klystron tube, which was a necessary prerequisite for a lot of today's technology.
Like radar,
things like radar, MRI machines, satellite communication, even things like classic guitar amps would use a Klystron tube.
Wow.
And so the technology has since been replaced with other technology, but it was the first. We actually have an original Klystron tube that's about 3-4 feet tall.
Wow, there it is right there.
Right here next to us. And it was one of the tubes that was used in the first live TV broadcast from the East Coast to the West Coast in the 1950s. Which was really cutting-edge technology at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We forget sometimes that we're such a big country, and to be able to transmit live, happening right now, images and sound from one coast to the other was a major technology upgrade.
Jumping topics, do you ever do presentations? Presenters come here?
Absolutely. We have a quarterly lecture series called the Carnegie Lecture that we've been thrilled to have some really phenomenal speakers come through, whether they be local or state history, regional history.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had a person who just happened to be 5 generations local, but is currently one of the worldwide experts on the Mayan writing system.
Wow.
And came through and gave a talk about Mayan writing. We're really happy to have speakers come through, whether it be in person, Zoom, hybrid.
For your in-person presentation, is it free entry again?
For the most part, we occasionally will have a speaker who requests that there be a charge at the door, but that's infrequent. For the most part, we are a nonprofit, so we do rely on donations, but it's also our mission to be providing these stories, this information, this access. So we try to provide as much as we can free to the public, while at the same time asking that if our services are valued and appreciated, we do appreciate donations in return.
And what else would somebody experience here? You have some really cool historic photographs of San Luis Obispo.
Yes, we have a wonderful selection of photographs. Our collection is probably about 80 to 100,000 photographs in addition to the other objects and physical things that we have. So we've got a wonderful collection of pretty much anything you can imagine.
So you bring things out and rotate.
We try to keep
it fresh.
Exactly. Yeah. We try to get new things out, things that you wouldn't expect. We also try to do that through the website, through our social media, and through the email.
And speaking of that, where would somebody go online to find out about you?
Yeah, our website is historycenterslo.org. Yeah, you can sign up for the newsletter. You can check out what exhibits we have, links to our social media. We try to just have, hey, this is a cool picture, relating to other things that are going on regionally. So, yeah.
And what people don't know is that 90% of your stuff is hidden away.
It is indeed. So in addition to the museum, we do have a research room that people can come in and ask questions and research, whether it be their ancestor or the house that they live in or a story that they heard or that thing that you drive past every day and you don't know what it is. The number one thing people do come through looking for is pictures of their house, which unfortunately, it's a fairly recent phenomenon to have people taking pictures of houses. Mm-hmm. So that's not something we have a lot of, but we do have a variety of newspaper clippings and landscape photos and people and all of that kind of stuff.
And that being said, I'm sure you appreciate local people who donate.
Absolutely.
Stuff, yeah.
So we were founded in the 1950s, and we were a group of well-meaning amateurs. And I mean that in the best possible sense. People who were interested, who cared about history, and really wanted to try to preserve it. In the last 20, 25, 30 years, we've really made the transition into a professional institution. We're narrowing our collections focus. So it's not so much that we just want a thing that's old. Mm-hmm. We want to ask questions about how is it relevant to San Luis Obispo? What does it tell us about San Luis Obispo's history? And it doesn't necessarily have to be old. Mm-hmm. It can be fairly new, but relevant to a major event that 10, 15, 100 years from now, people are going to want to know more about. And so we do have a process. We don't like people to just come by and say, leave things on the doorstep, right, or I was on my way to the dump and thought maybe you wanted some of it. Yeah, if people think it's relevant to our history, they're probably right, and we'd love to talk to them about it.
Thomas Kessler, thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely. Truly a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, always. I could stay here all day. We've been speaking with Thomas Kessler, Executive Director at the San Luis Obispo History Center. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We'll see you downtown at the Carnegie Library.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundationathearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.